Let's pretend. It certainly lived up to its title. Tonight, we ask why the sea is salty, and, of course, it requires a trip to Davy Jones' locker and some magic that gets out of control, sort of in the spirit of the Sorcerer's Apprentice, if you remember that story about the brooms that keep multiplying and carrying buckets of water until things are quite out of control. This is Let's Pretend from August 22, 1942.
Broadcasting System presents Nyla Mack, Let's Pretender. Yes, sir, that music of fairy tales means just one thing, doesn't it? It's time for Let's Pretend. And so another week rolls around, bringing you an invitation from the Columbia Broadcasting System to drop the cares and worries of the day and come along to the mystical, magical land of make-believe. All right, pretenders. Take over.
Thank you, Mr. Conover. And gang, before our story begins, we have a little matter to attend to.
Which is what, Gwen?
Oh, answering a couple of questions.
Not about our theme music.
Mm-hmm, that's one of them. Miriam, suppose you take over for that one.
All right, Gwen. Our musical theme is fairy tales. The composer is Komzak, K-O-M-Z-A-K. And you can order it from your local music dealer.
Thank you, Miriam. The next question comes from a number of listeners, and it goes something like this. I have written twice for my story, and you never do it. Why don't you play Bluebeard for me? End quote. Well, we'll take care of that question.
I believe I can answer that one, Gwen.
All right, the floor is yours, Albert.
Well, for about 10 years, I've helped Miss Mack take care of all the request letters that come to her desk. In all that time, there has been only one story that parents didn't want their children to hear, and that's Bluebeard. Even though we changed the ending, all the wires were restored, and Bluebeard was the only rascal that stayed dead. There was an occasional letter of criticism. And why spoil a perfect record with one story when we have so many exciting ones to do in place of it? Now, doesn't that make sense?
Well, it seems so to me, and thank you, Albert. All right, the question department is closed for today, and now the letter which settled the story for this morning. It says, Dear Magic Makers, I asked my daddy the other day what makes the ocean salty. And he said, why don't you write to Let's Pretend? They'll know. So I'm asking you, do you know why the sea is salty? And if you do, will you tell me right away on account of I've got to know?
Well, we know the fairy tale explanation of why the sea is salt. You think that'll do?
Oh, I think so. What's more, it's a funny story, so let's do it, huh? Now, whose turn is it to say how we'll travel to Let's Pretend?
I think it's mine.
Oh, you do? Well, what makes you think so, Jackie Ayers?
On account of I haven't had a turn for years and years.
Well, all right, old man. How do we travel?
How about a flock of elephants? One for each of us.
That fella has big ideas. Elephants suit the rest of you? All right, a flock of elephants. One for each of us. And we pay them off in peanuts. Here we go. One, two, three. Straight through Let's Pretend to why the sea is salt. Hi, Jumbo.
Up, King.
Let's go.
Come on.
Oh, confound it. Who's there at this time of night? Come in.
It's I, your brother, Richard. And Clara, my wife, is with me.
What in time do you want at this late hour?
Well, now that you're here, you may as well sit down.
Thank you, Richard. Good evening, Mary.
Good evening.
Oh, the fire feels good. We didn't build a fire today.
Well, what's on your mind? Why have you come here? Speak up, Jack. It's late.
Oh, just the same cordial brother, aren't you?
Only relatives would call at this hour of the night. What do you want?
Yes, and of course you do want something.
Very well, brother. I'll tell you why we came, although it isn't so easy to do it. Briefly, we're hungry.
I thought so. Begging again. Give me this. Give me that.
I wouldn't have had to do this if I'd had my share of our father's estate that you cheated me out of.
Cheated?
Don't you dare say such a thing to my husband.
I dare, all right, Mary. And don't threaten me again, or I shall go to the courts and prove it.
Prove it? You can't prove a thing.
Quiet, Mary. Well, I'll be generous with you on one condition.
I promise it. No matter what it is, we must have food. What do you want?
Just this. I'll give you a joint of beef and bread, too, if you'll take it and go to Davy Jones' locker.
And how do I get back?
That's for you to figure out.
Oh, no. It's a trick, Jack. Don't promise him. He knows you can't get back.
Never mind, Clara. Don't fret. At least it'll provide for you, dear. And I'd just as soon be in Davy Jones' locker as the way I am.
No, Jack, no. Don't promise him that. Please, we'll manage some other way.
There is no other way, dear. All right, brother. Give me the joint of beef, and I'll make a trip to this famous locker of Davy Jones.
Go to the stone cellar. Get your meat, and then remember your promise.
Very well. Goodbye, and best wishes to you, my generous brother.
Goodbye.
Excuse me, but can you... Will you...
Will we what, sir? What is it?
I'm starving. Give me some bread. I hate to ask you, sir, but I have no money and I haven't eaten in a long time.
Oh, we know what that is, don't we, Clara?
Yes, we do. We can't give him...
Oh, yes, my dear. Little as we have, we can spare enough bread for this old man. Let's not be like my poor selfish brother.
You're right, Jack. Give him some of the beef and the bread, too. Let me help you with it.
Heaven bless you, my friends. Perhaps someday I can return this kindness.
Well, even now, perhaps. Can you tell me by any chance which way I go to find Davy Jones' locker?
Strange. There must indeed, sir, be a fate that rules over us and brings us in touch with those we need and those who need us.
Here you are, sir.
You mean you know the way?
More than that. Listen, you are young and strong. You can dive to the bottom of the sea.
I think I can do that all right, but what happens when I get there?
Well, don't be afraid of the strange little people you will meet. The moment you arrive, let them see the joint of beef you're carrying. They will want it.
Oh, I say, must I take that with me? It'll give my wife food for a long time, and if I shouldn't get back...
It will mean more to you there. Let the sea gnomes bid for it. But in payment, take only one thing. The little handmill they have. They won't want to, but they'll want the meat so badly that they finally will yield. So hold your bargain. And when you come up, I'll be waiting on the shore to show you how to use it. It's worth the trip. Mark my word.
I believe you. All right, Clara. Suppose you go home and wait for me there. I'll be back as soon as I can, if I get back at all.
All right, my dear. I suppose you know what's best.
If he doesn't, I do. Trust me, madam. Both of you have been generous with me, and now I'll help you.
Wish me luck. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Jack. Good luck. I'll be waiting for you.
Come along, my friend. Your adventure begins.
Suppose this is as good a place to dive as any, so here I go.
Ooh,
quite a dive. Hello there, little fellows. May I come in?
You are kind, stranger. We don't welcome people here.
Oh, come now. Be friendly, little gnomes. I'm really quite harmless. Surely you don't have many visitors here. The trip down is a bit strenuous.
Aren't you afraid? Don't you know where you are?
Of course I do. I'm in Davy Jones' locker. And you fellows are the gnomes who guard the sunken treasures. Am I right?
But he's not afraid.
Well, we do guard the treasures.
And if you plan to steal any of it, you'll never live to tell what happened to you.
Oh, come, come, fellows. You can't scare me. I just want to pay my respects, and then I'll take my joint of meat and go back home.
Meat? What kind?
Oh, it's a joint of beef. Real juicy, too. As a matter of fact, it's one of the best I ever tasted.
Of them. I have the emperor's jewels. I'll give them to you for the meat.
We'll give you all the wealth of the sea for that joint of beef. What do you say?
No, I don't think I'll sell it. It's too juicy. I'll take it back home.
Oh, we haven't tasted any fresh meat in years. Name your price, fellow.
Yes, you must. We'll give you anything you say.
Well, I couldn't sell it, but maybe I'd trade it in exchange for...
What? Tell us.
Well, for that little old handmill you have hidden there.
No, not the handmill. Anything but that. The handmill belongs here. Gold, diamonds, rubies, but not the handmill.
No, we won't give that up.
No, sir.
That's really the only thing I want, so I'll take the beef and go home and make a juicy stew for my dinner. Good night. Goodbye.
Well, what is it?
Well, I, for one, am wanting to get the mill. I want some of that beef.
I, too. The fragrance of it is driving me crazy. I'd rather have it than anything. How do the rest of you feel about it?
Very well, as long as the others agree.
We'll give you the handmill in exchange for the beef.
Oh, that's more like it. All right, where is it?
I'll get it. Chief Gnome, get the beef.
Here. Here it is.
Oh, fine. And here's your beef. What a chance. Thanks for the handmill, little gnomes. So I take one deep breath and wish me luck, for up I go.
So it should make it all right.
Hello, old friend. Just a minute till I get up on the bank.
Yeah, here you are.
Oh. Feels good to be up on the land again.
Did you get the handmill? Did you?
Yes, here it is. Maybe you're right, but it doesn't look like it's worth trading a whole joint of beef for.
So you think. You don't know what I know about it. Listen to me, fella. This handmill is magic.
Magic? How? When? What?
It's worth all the beef in the kingdom. Now listen to me carefully. When you get home, set the mill on the table. Then tell it what you want, no matter what it may be. And after you've made your wish, say to it, "Turn, little wheel, grind out my command. Stop when I say tabergo, tabergan."
You mean to say that anything
I... Try it. Take it home and try it.
Oh, many thanks, my friend. If it works, you've made me wealthy, and I'll never cease being grateful. I hope you'll come over and have dinner with us sometime.
Thank you.
Good night.
Wait a minute. The most important thing of all is not to forget the way to stop it. Will you remember?
Oh, you bet I will. Stop when I say tabergo, tabergan.
That's the trick. Good night.
Sweetheart.
Jack, I'm so glad you're back safely. Did you get the handmill?
I did, my love, and here it is.
Oh, Jack. What? Why, that's nothing. How could you trade the meat for that?
Oh, wait. Let's play a game. Now, what would you like to have right now? Think carefully. What is your wish, Your Highness?
This is a silly game, but all right. I'll play it. I think I'd like to have some... roast beef and brown potatoes to go with it.
All right. Roast beef and potatoes. Turn, little wheel. Grind out my command.
Oh, Jack. Look. Look. Oh, joint of beef. Look, another. And potatoes. And more. Oh, catch them, Jack. Oh, stop it. Stop it, Jack.
Stop when I say tabergo, tabergan. Well.
Oh, Jack, how wonderful. How perfectly wonderful.
Oh, Clara, we've got something. Now, how about new clothes, Clara, and all new furniture for the house? We need them.
Oh, yes, we do, but will it do that, Jack? Will it really?
Oh, let's see. New clothes. Beautiful new clothes for us both, little Mill. And furniture, and all new and beautiful, too. Now, hold your breath, Clara.
Oh, Jack.
Turn, little wheel. Grind out my command.
Jack, look. Oh, how lovely.
There's your new dress, Clara. Velvet, no less. Oh, and here's my new outfit.
Oh.
New shoes for you. Look. And mine. Now, how about the furniture, little Mill?
Jack, look. New chairs. New tables. New divana. A new carpet. And all in its proper place. Oh, Jack.
How about money, little wheel? Money, money, money. That's it. Go on. Come on, more.
Jack.
Grind, little wheel. Money.
Jack.
Stop when I say tabergo, tabergan. Oh. Be quiet, Clara. Now, from this point, let's go slowly. Who's there?
It's I, Jack. Mary and I.
Richard. Whatever has happened?
Come in. Well, brother, this is a surprise.
I just came over to see that you kept your promise and what's this? Money? Look, the room is filled with it. It's all over the floor.
And look at the new clothes both of them have. And furniture.
What's the meaning of this, Jack?
Well, wouldn't you like to know?
Clara, tell us. How did you come by all this sudden wealth?
Well, that's for Jack to say. If he cares to tell you, it's all right with me.
2 hours ago, you were hungry, begging for bread at my house. Now look, new clothes, new furniture, and gold all over the floor. What have you been up to?
You sent me to Davy Jones' locker, Brother Richard, and I went. I have you to thank for all of this.
For what? What did you find there?
Yes, tell us.
Are you sure you don't mind, Clara?
No, Jack, go ahead.
Well, I have a handmill now that works for me. I'm through with worries and work forever.
I don't understand this. I don't understand it at all.
A handmill? Explain yourself.
I'll do more. You just tell me something you'd like to have. Then if you and Mary will leave us 1 minute, I promise you it'll be here.
I don't believe it. Very well, what do you want, Mary?
Oh, it sounds very silly to me, so I'll wish for something equally silly. I've always wanted a parrot. Not that I believe for 1 minute you can do this, but that's what I wish for.
That's certainly silly enough. And if it works and you've wasted a wish on a fool parrot, I don't know what I'll do to you.
It won't work, and you won't do anything to me either.
You take Mary and go into the kitchen until I call you.
Will this foolishness take long?
Only a moment.
All right. Come on, Mary.
Why did you send them out, Jack?
I don't want them to see how it's done. Oh, she wants a parrot, eh? All right. Turn, little wheel. Grind out my command. Look who's here. Hello.
Oh, how funny. Really, now, Jack, it is.
Stop when I say. Tap her, go, tap her again. It is indeed. Now, call him in.
Call him in.
Mary, Richard, here's your parrot, and he's very pretty.
Well, I guess it didn't work this time, did it?
See for yourself and listen to him.
Hi there.
Great Scott.
You said it. When do we eat?
He did work. What? This is magic.
Is there a cracker in the house?
What do you want for the handmill? I'll pay you any price you want.
Oh, don't sell it, Jack, please.
Wait, Clara. Well, now, let me see. $5,000, and you can come for the mill on Sunday when the chimes ring out for first services.
That's a high price. But very well, it's a bargain. Now, come, Mary, it's very late. That's a great deal of money for you two to have. However, perhaps it's worth it. We'll be here on Sunday.
What's cooking?
Give me my parrot.
Give me it back. I'm back.
Come on, Mary. Good night to you.
Jack, aren't they furious? But why did you do that? Why did you agree to give up the handmill?
Because in a week's time, we can get everything on earth we want out of it. Besides, I'm not through with this unhappy brother of mine yet. He needs to be taught a great deal about fair dealing and honesty. And a little bit of brotherly love would help, too.
Well, I guess you know what you're doing, Jack. I'll say no more.
Just wait and see the fun on Sunday.
You got it? Is it really ours now?
Yes, confound him. Think of that idiot having all that money. He took a great deal of my fortune, but it's worth it.
Of course it is. I just didn't want them to raise the price. What shall we wish for first? Are you sure you know how to work it?
Certainly I do.
Then go ahead. What do you want?
I'd like some good food for a change. You don't ever seem to learn how to cook.
Oh, is that so? Well, no one else ever found fault with it, and any time you don't like it, you...
Stop arguing. Let's try the handmill. I wish for some good herring and some broth to go with it. Come on, little wheel. Turn and grind out my command.
It's doing it. Look. Look at the herring. Oh, how wonderful they look. A whole platter of them. Richard.
Ah, that's more like herring ought to look. Ah, now, that's enough herring. Now we'll have the broth, little wheel. That's fine. Fill another bowl. We want plenty of it. That's it. Now that's enough. Hey, that's enough.
Stop it, Richard. It's running over on the floor. Make it stop, I say.
That's enough, you fool. Mary, get the mop. Get the bucket. Get the tub. Hey!
It's all over the floor. Stop it. It's flooding the place. Make it stop.
I can't stop it. It won't stop, the fool. Stop it, I say.
Catch the table. It's floating away. Make this blasted thing stop. It's up to the windowsill. Get your brother. Come on.
Yes, my brother. Let's find him. Let us in. Let us in.
Quickly, open the door.
Come in. What's all the excitement?
Stop that fool, Mill.
What happened?
I wished for broth. It started and won't stop. The furniture is floating away. The broth is running in a stream down the hill after us. There are herrings all over the place.
You make it stop.
All right, I'll stop it, but it'll cost you another $5,000, and besides, I take the mill back.
I won't pay it. It's a holdup. I won't pay it.
All right, then. Your lands will swim in herring broth.
Oh, yes, pay it. It'll ruin everything.
All right, I'll pay. Only stop it and come and take the thing away.
All right, I'm off to get the handmill, and don't worry, it's stopped now. Clara, I told you we'd have some fun.
Well, Captain Howard, you look very glum. Something wrong?
Most assuredly, Lady Violet.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's such a beautiful day. Why, the sea is like blue glass. What a lovely trip so far. What's happened?
Oh, those tourists that came on the boat, they made fun of me.
Oh, I think that's very unkind, Captain Howard.
You know, I can talk to some people like you and not stutter at all.
Yes, I'm sure you can.
You know, Lady Violet, there are some words I just can't seem to say.
Well, I shouldn't worry about it, Captain. You can say plenty of others.
Yeah.
And I, for one, can understand you perfectly.
Well, that's one of them.
Oh, Captain?
Yes, Lady Violet?
What harbor is this that the boat is coming into?
This is Latovia, Lady Violet.
Oh, isn't this where that famous man lives who's so very wealthy? I think his name is Sir Jack.
The one who lives in the House of Gold?
Yes, the one who has a magic machine of some kind that turns out all his wealth.
Yes, he lives here. You see, there's the Castle of Gold.
Uh-huh.
You can see it flashing from the ship to the left there. See the tower?
Yes.
It's solid rubies and diamonds. Pretty grand, huh?
Captain, do you think we might visit the castle and see its wonderful things? You said you were taking a party ashore today. Could you arrange a visit there and let us see it?
Well, maybe we could, Lady Violet.
Oh, I'd like that. Let's try. Come on.
Very well, my lady. Your wish is my pleasure. Come along.
Nice of you to allow us to come in and see your splendid castle, Madam Clara.
Well, not at all. We welcome people from across the seas, and I've enjoyed hearing your exciting adventures.
And Sir Jack, you've been most kind and courteous, and we appreciate it.
Not at all, Lady Violet. Captain, what cargo have you in your ship?
Salt, Sir Jack. Year in and year out, I haul salt back and forth across the seas. Oh, I'm just sick of it. I'd like to settle down in one place for a while.
Well, now, here's a proposition.
Huh?
I like you, Captain, and I'll make a bargain with you. Why not buy my magic mill from me? I have all I want, and you're an old fellow. I'd like to see you enjoy life. I'll sell it to you. And then you can stay ashore if you like and still supply your firm with all the salt they can use. What do you say?
I'd like that just fine, Jack. What'll you take?
Make the price reasonable, Jack. After all, we really have all we can ever need.
All right, dear. Well, Captain, from you, $5 and your goodwill.
Well, that's certainly fine of you, Jack. I can't say it, but you know what I mean.
Yes. And come with me and I'll explain it to you and tell you just what to do to make it work. And most important, make it stop.
This is fine of you two kind people.
It's your lucky day, Captain Howard.
Excuse me, Lady Violet. I'll be right back.
Come along, Captain, and meet the famous handmill.
Not you, Lady Violet. I'd like to have you stay.
Certainly, Captain.
Everybody else below.
Aye, aye, sir. Aye, aye, sir.
There's no reason why I shouldn't try the handmill now. You already know about it, and there's no need to wait until I get home.
I shall be thrilled to stay and watch, Captain.
All right. Here's the mill. If I fill my boat with salt now, then we won't have any work to do at the end of the voyage. That's just what I'll do. I want salt. Now, turn little wheel and grind out my command.
Oh, it works.
Well,
Captain, look, isn't that amazing? See how the salt pours out. Look.
Well, so it does. that's wonderful. What's the rest of what I say?
Oh, I don't know, but the deck is pretty well covered with salt. You'd better stop it.
That's what I want to do.
Well, hurry up. The salt is pouring out. Quickly, Captain, quickly.
Turn the wheel. Grind out my command. Stop. All right, sister, stop.
Captain, don't wish for more.
Oh.
Stop it. The boat is listing to one side. Make it stop.
Why? I can't remember how.
Master, the boat. We must be shipping water, sir. She's listing badly.
Remember, man the lifeboat.
Aye, aye, sir.
Stop when I say.
What did you say, sir?
Talking to you. Man the boat.
Where's all this salt coming from? We're listing badly.
Well,
the salt bath has broken or something, sir. The ship is filled with salt.
Hold on, Captain. The ship is sinking.
Hurry, Captain. Think of the end of the command.
The ship is sinking, sir.
Stop when I say. Don't get to the boat. Never mind me. Get to the boat.
It's that mill, sir. It's grinding out salt by the ton. Stop it.
That's what I'm trying to do.
Stop it. Stop it.
It's no use. I can't think of the word. Stop when I say.
Lady Violet, quickly, the lifeboat.
No.
Stand by, men. Hey, give me your hand, Lady Violet.
Into the lifeboat.
Grind out,
ready now.
Come on, Captain. Hurry up.
Pull away quick. The boat is sinking.
Aye, aye, sir.
Good. There she goes.
Oh, fine. Stay up. Fine.
Where's the mill, Captain?
Die. I don't know. There it is, sir. See, it's sinking to the bottom.
Oh,
yes, I see it. It's still grinding out salt. It'll make the whole sea salty. Make it stop, Captain.
Turn little wheel. Grind out my command.
Grind out my command.
Stop when I say.
Stop when I say.
Say. Skip it.
So ends the story of Why the Sea is Salt. And another episode of Let's Pretend comes to an end. Was this your favorite story? If not, write to Let's Pretend in care of this station, and we'll try to make your favorite come true. And to those of you who have written before for passes to see the broadcast, please be patient. We're taking care of them just as fast as time and the studio capacity permit. The cast for today included...
Gwen Davies.
Jack.
Kingsley Colton.
His wife, Clara.
Miriam Wolfe.
His brother, Richard.
Albert Alley.
The wife, Mary.
Sybil Trent.
The old man.
Arthur Anderson.
The chief gnome.
Skippy Holmeyer.
The second gnome.
Jackie Yeard.
The stuttering captain.
Jack Rhymes.
The first mate.
Bob Court.
Lady Violet.
Daisy Alden.
And studio technician for Let's Pretend, Harry Birch. These stories are dramatized by Nyla Mack.
And now you know, at least according to one account, why the sea is salty. Courtesy of Let's Pretend. And a broadcast from August 22, 1942. Stay right there for Richard Diamond. He's waiting in the wings. This is Old Time Radio Drama and the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tonight our cast includes that most versatile of radio actresses, Virginia Gregg. Well, there were others as well, of course, Lorene Tuttle and Jeanette Nolan among them. But Virginia Gregg, versatile tonight in a story about George Farmer, who has burned up in a Northwoods fire, and a guy who calls Diamond about it, who has another mishap all his own. Our story is called The Insurance Matter. It sounds worthy of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. And our story, starring, of course, Dick Powell, comes from August 23rd, 1950.
Listen while the makers of Rexall drug products and 10,000 independent Rexall family druggists bring you Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, private detective.
This is your Rexall family druggist, speaking to you for the 10,000 independent druggists who have made the word Rexall part of our own store names, and who recommend and sell the 2,000 or more drug products made by the Rexall Drug Company. Like Rexall MI-31, for example. Rexall's mouthwash, gargle, and breath deodorant. Yes, for a dependable, refreshing mouthwash, remember Rexall MI-31. And remember also, you can depend on any drug product that bears the name Rexall.
Good health to all from Rexall. Now your Rexall family druggist brings you a transcribed half hour with Richard Diamond, private detective, starring Dick Powell.
Diamond Detective Agency, we never say die.
Mr. Diamond?
That's right.
How would you like to make $1,200?
Do I have to name the mystery melody?
This is not a quiz show, Mr. Diamond. I have a proposition for you, a business arrangement by which you may profit to the tune of $1,200.
Oh, well, that's my favorite tune.
My name is Evans, Dr. William Evans. I have an office in the Grant Professional Building, Suite 409.
Grant Professional Building, Suite 409.
Yes, I'd appreciate it if you would come right over.
Well, it's after six now.
I'll stay in my office until you get here. And so as to save time with explanations, on your way over, pick up a late afternoon Times and read the article on page 3, column 2, a story about a man called Farmer.
I locked the office, went downstairs and out on the street where I purchased the late afternoon Times, and in the cab headed for Dr. Evans's office, I read the article on page 3, column 2. George Farmer burns to death, and a picture of the deceased. According to the article, Farmer had been on a vacation in the North Woods. He'd gone to sleep smoking a cigarette, and that was that. Mattress caught fire, and before anyone noticed, the whole cabin was burning. My cab led me out in front of Dr. Evans's building, and one look at the large crowd, plus the very familiar black sedan in the passenger loading zone, tied my stomach in a knot.
All right, now, get back, you. You?
Evening, Sergeant Otis.
Lieutenant, what are you yelling about, Melonhead?
Oh.
Evening, Lieutenant Levinson.
Oh, no. I hope you were just passing by, Mr. Diamond.
I saw the crowd, Lieutenant Levinson, and came over to find out if you and Otis were playing hopscotch or possibly kick the can.
This is a swell time to make with the jokes. Some guy took a dive out of the fourth floor window.
Fourth floor? Dead?
Very. Name was Evans. Had offices in the building. Dr. William Evans.
Guy named Evans. Offices on the fourth floor. Doctor. Some guy. Just 20 minutes before, he'd called me with a $1,200 proposition. And now it looked like the only thing I was going to get out of the deal was a late afternoon paper and a story about a guy named Farmer.
Farmer? Burned to death and bad? Oh, yeah. We got a report on the case.
Well, this Dr. Evans was hooked up with it in some way.
He offered you $1,200?
He asked me if I was interested.
Silly boy. There's the doctor's office. And there's the window he went out of.
Who saw him jump?
Bill Mitchell, cop on the beat, saw the body come out of the window feet first. Said at least it looked like he jumped.
No sign of a struggle?
I'll have the boys give the room a good going over.
Well, we're pretty sure of two things, Walt. First, there's a strong possibility that Dr. Evans didn't commit suicide. Also, that he knew something about George Farmer, the guy who got burned to death.
Might have been Farmer's doctor.
Well, there's one way to find out. This Times article says that Farmer left a widow. While you're checking things here, I think I'll go see what Mrs. Farmer's views are on dead husbands and dead doctors.
Yes?
Mrs. Farmer?
Yes, what is it?
I'd like to talk to you about your late husband.
Are you from the police again?
Well, I just left them, but this is my own idea. My name's Diamond. I'm a private detective.
Oh? You working for the insurance company?
No.
Well, then just what do you want? I'm tired of questions about my husband's death. I've told the police and insurance company everything I know.
Well, I know it's been difficult, but I won't take long, and there are a few things I'd really like to find out.
Well, what are they?
Do you know a Dr. Evans?
Dr. Evans? No. No, I don't know any Dr. Evans.
Your husband never mentioned him, said he knew him?
No, he didn't. Besides, what has this doctor to do with my husband?
Well, I don't know yet. You mentioned an insurance company. Was your husband insured, Mrs. Farmer?
Yes, with the National Mutual. But if you're not working for the insurance company or the police, who are you working for?
Me.
You? Look, would you mind telling me what possible interest you could have in the death of my husband?
Tell you the truth, I really don't know. But there are $1,200 mixed up in it somewhere, and that's enough to keep me well interested until I find some answers. Thank you, Mrs. Farmer. Hello, Walt.
Hello, Rick. You see the wife?
Yeah, lovely girl. Type you'd like to bring home to Mom. You find out anything?
Nothing in the room to indicate the doctor was pushed out of the window.
Mrs. Farmer didn't know the doctor. Said her late husband didn't either. But she thought at first I was from an insurance company.
Well, what company?
Oh, a National Mutual.
Otis.
Yeah, Lieutenant.
Got the names of the officials in National Mutual?
Yeah.
Bring them in.
Right.
Why all the action?
We checked with the dead doctor's nurse. She said aside from his regular practice, he worked for two or three big insurance firms. National Mutual was one of them. I didn't think of a connection then, but I made the check just in case.
Well, George Farmer was burned to death. Dr. Evans knew something about Farmer. Farmer was insured with the National Mutual, and the doctor worked for National Mutual. Might be a tie-up.
Well, the vice president of National Mutual is Arthur Peterson. It's not too late. Let's take a run over to his house and see if he knows anything about it.
Well, gentlemen, in answer to your questions, yes, we did insure the late George Farmer, and Dr. Evans does work for us. As to whether or not he was the doctor who examined Farmer, I really couldn't say. I'd have to check the files. Lieutenant, aren't you satisfied? You think there's something wrong?
We don't know. Dr. Evans jumped or was pushed out of his office window this evening.
Good Lord.
He called Mr. Diamond here and indicated he knew something about Farmer's death.
Have you settled the claim with Mrs. Farmer yet?
No, but it's to be settled within the week. $25,000 policy.
Hmm. If someone could show your company that Farmer's death was no accident, there'd be a reward, wouldn't there?
Yes. 10% of the policy. In this case, $2,500.
Oh, half of that'd be about $1,200.
You think we could look at your records tonight, Mr. Peterson? It's very important.
I, of course. I'll just get a coat and we'll go right down to the office.
We left with Mr. Peterson and headed for the offices of the National Mutual. A quick look through the file showed us what we wanted. A full report on the state of George Farmer's health. Okayed for insurance by the examining physician, Dr. William Evans.
It's too bad the first claim on an accident policy has to be a death.
Well, that ties that up. Now what have we got?
Enough to keep on looking.
I think I'll go have a long talk with Farmer's wife.
Our company detectives checked that. She was right here in the city when her husband died.
Well, a little talk won't hurt.
Who sold Farmer the policy, Mr. Peterson?
According to the files, the insurance man was Martin Ames.
You have his address here?
Yes. Here you are. Good man. One of our leading salesmen.
While you're talking with Mrs. Farmer, Walt, I think I'll run over and see this man Ames. Maybe he can do us some good. If the late Dr. Evans hadn't offered me $1,200, I would have okayed his four-floor dive as an act of suicide. But the way things were shaping up, he was going to split an insurance reward. And knowing doctors to be pretty practical people, I just couldn't imagine him giving up that kind of money for a fast trip to the sidewalk. The home of Martin Ames was an apartment on the Lower East Side. His wife answered the door.
No, my husband isn't here. I was just leaving.
You know where I can find your husband, Mrs. Ames? It's rather important.
I don't know what you want, but if you want to see my husband, that's where I'm going now. I just got a call. He's had an automobile accident. Miss?
Yes?
I'm Mrs. Ames. I was told my husband...
Oh, yes, Miss Ames. If you'll just have a seat, I'll call Dr. Tully. He's in charge of your husband's case.
But I want to see my husband. Can I see him?
You'll have to see Dr. Tully first.
But I want to know how serious it is. I should be with my husband.
If you'll just be patient for a moment, Miss Ames, I'll get Dr. Tully.
Come on, Mrs. Ames. Let's sit down over here. Just sit down right over here and try and relax.
Dr. Tully, third floor reception room, please.
Hello, Walt.
Dr. Tully.
No, this is a police officer, Miss Ames.
Room, police officer?
Dr. He's a friend of mine, Miss Ames.
Nothing about my husband.
Dr. Tully's the man you want to see.
Can I talk with you, Rick?
Oh, sure. Will you excuse me, Miss Ames?
Oh, yes, of course.
You'll be all right?
I'll be all right.
Okay, Walt.
Well, this far enough.
About her husband?
Yeah, I was questioning Mrs. Farmer when I got the call over the hot shot. I remembered, so I figured you'd wind up here.
Have you heard how he is?
Died 5 minutes ago.
Oh, no. Accident?
Hit and run. Before he died, he told us a car ran him off the road. Went down a 20-foot embankment and right into a cement retaining wall. The wall stopped him from going any further, but broke his neck.
Any lead on the other car?
No, a lonely stretch of road. No one else saw it. It happened too fast for Ames.
Now, wait a minute. That must be Dr. Tully going over to Mrs. Ames now.
Yeah,
Mrs.
That's
Ames,
Tully.
I'm afraid that...
He did everything he could. I don't envy him.
Your husband is dead.
Oh, no.
Mrs. Ames.
Oh, dear.
Mrs.
God,
Ames, please
no.
Control yourself, Mrs. Ames.
Come on, Walt. This is turning into a rotten case.
Before we continue with the adventures of Richard Diamond, private detective, here's your Rexall family druggist.
I often think that perhaps the most common under-the-weather complaint in the average family is either acid stomach or plain old sluggishness.
Well, you certainly hit the nail on the head as far as my family is concerned.
And I'm also sure that's why there are literally millions of bottles of Rexall Milk of Magnesia on hand right now in family medicine cabinets.
Why, that sounds almost unbelievable.
No, ma'am. Not when you know that Rexall Milk of Magnesia is both a quick-acting antacid and a thoroughly effective yet gentle laxative. What's more, Rexall Milk of Magnesia has none of that unpleasant, earthy, gritty taste.
Say, my family would really appreciate that.
Then why not let them see for themselves just how creamy, smooth, and actually pleasant-tasting Rexall Milk of Magnesia really is? Ask for it at Rexall drugstores everywhere. And remember, you can depend on any drug product that bears the name Rexall.
And now back to tonight's adventure with Richard Diamond, private detective, starring Dick Powell.
A little after 6, I got a phone call, and by 6:30, the man who called was lying on a sidewalk, broken in two from a four-story drop. 2 hours later, an insurance salesman named Ames was run off the road and ended up with a broken neck. Coincidence? Not a bit. Walt found the location of the place where George Farmer had burned to death. Then we climbed in the squad car and started the long drive for the Catskills. Around 7 in the morning, we turned off the main highway and onto a dirt road. A sign reading, Sportsman's Retreat, 2 miles, pointed the way. And 20 minutes later, we were pulling up in front of the lodge.
welcome to Sportsman's Retreat.
Morning.
Police car, ain't it?
I'm Lieutenant Levinson, 5th Precinct, New York Police. This is Mr. Diamond.
Oh, howdy, howdy.
How are you?
You up here about Mr. Farmer's death?
Unofficially. You run the place?
Yeah, I'm the foreman. My name's Pop Sloan, but everybody just called me Pop.
We thought we'd stay a while, Pop. Can you put us up?
Well, sure. How long are you figuring on being around?
Oh, not long. We only brought one change of clothes.
Well, come on in. Breakfast was an hour ago, but if you're hungry, I can have the cook rustle up some bacon and eggs.
Well, sounds good.
Many people staying here, Pop?
Oh, about 14. Yeah, 14. Same crowd comes up every year. Sort of a club, you might call it.
How many years did George Farmer come out?
Oh, Mr. Farmer come up about, for the last 10 years.
Hey, who owns the place?
Mr. Phillips. He ain't here now, but he phoned and says he'll be in sometime this afternoon. Say, how come you fellas are interested in Mr. Farmer's death? We had the police and the insurance up here for 3 days. You're a little late, ain't you?
Well, there are a few things we haven't cleared up. Sure appreciate some help, Pop.
Yeah, sure. I'll give you all the help I can. I'll go get some breakfast for you, and then we can gab a little while.
Pop went back to the kitchen, and we relaxed in a couple of big leather chairs in front of a large window that looked out on a row of cabins.
That last cabin must have been Farmer's.
Yeah, nothing much left of it.
It's beautiful up here. Look at those trees with the sun shining through them.
Your soul is showing, Walter.
Oh!
It was a beautiful place, all right. The cabin stood in the clearing, fronted by well-kept paths and backed by tall trees. Pop came in a little later with enough bacon and eggs to feed a platoon of tapeworms, and we talked.
Where is everybody, Pop?
Out fishing. Get up about 4:30 around here.
Many of the men bring their wives?
Oh, some of them. Mr. Farmer used to bring his'n up every year. Fine-looking woman, Mrs. Farmer. Didn't come up this year, though, and it's too bad, too.
Why?
Well, might have saved him. Used to smoke in bed all the time. Maybe if she'd been around here, she might have caught him at it.
Who discovered the fire?
Oh, we all saw it, but it was too late. By the time we got there, the whole place was burning. By the time we got the hose going, there wasn't much left.
You say you all saw it. Where were you?
Oh, we was up to Willow Peak cooking out. That's about 3 miles from camp. You can see it from there. See? See that tall peak there to the left of them trees?
Yeah. How come Farmer didn't go along?
Oh, he never went on many hikes. Had trouble with his legs, you know.
Anyone stay here in camp besides Farmer?
No. Everybody was up in Willow Peak.
Who examined the body?
Doc Combs from Evanston come up and looked at the body.
Where's Evanston?
About 50 miles east. But if you want to talk to the doc, you'll have to wait till everybody comes in from fishing.
Oh, God. Is he up here now?
Yeah. Come up last night. Gonna stay a week for the fishing.
Oh, Pop.
Oh, well, morning, Mr. Phillips.
Good morning.
I didn't expect you till this afternoon. This is Mr. Phillips, the owner.
Oh, I have some bags out in the car. Will you get them, please? Good morning, gentlemen.
Howdy there. Good morning.
Yeah, some more police fellas, Mr. Phillips.
About Mr. Farmer's death?
Yeah, I've got to clear up a few things.
Would you please get those bags for me, Pop?
Bags? Sure.
We just wanted to ask a couple of questions, Mr. Phillips. I'm Lieutenant Levinson. This is Mr. Diamond.
Well, how do you do?
How do you do?
Do you mind if I sit down?
Well, not at all.
I thought the authorities were satisfied.
No, I guess they are. Where were you when the accident occurred, Mr. Phillips?
I was on my way here from the city. I arrived about an hour later.
You live in the city, Mr. Phillips?
Well, yes, I have a house there. I divide my time between there and the lodge.
Tell me something about Farmer, Mr. Phillips. What kind of a man was he?
Well,
you fellas want any more breakfast?
No, thanks, Pop.
Go
ahead, Mr. Phillips.
Good old Pop. Well, there really isn't much to tell. Farmer was a nice sort of a guy, rather quiet. As you know, he had a very bad habit of smoking in bed.
You have any trouble with him smoking in bed before?
Oh, yes, several times. Nearly started a fire 2 years ago.
Well, wouldn't that make you watch him a little more closely?
Well, you see, his wife came up with him every year, but this one, she was usually near enough to prevent any trouble.
How long did he usually stay here?
Whole week, 10 days, however long his vacation lasted.
Mm-hmm. What was his business?
I think he was in advertising.
Make much money?
I have no idea. He certainly never spent much. He was tight as the devil. He was known for it, in fact. Coming up here was the only luxury he allowed himself. He'd tell everyone he'd save all year just to come up here and relax for a week or so.
Hey, Lieutenant! Lieutenant. Here comes Doc Combs. He must have got his limit.
Oh, you gentlemen interested in talking to the doctor?
Yeah, Pop tells us he was the one who examined the body.
Well, what'd you get, Doc?
Hi, Pop. I got my limit.
Oh, good for you, good for you. Come on over here. A couple of fellas want to talk to you.
Well, how are you, Phil?
Hello, Doc.
Pop said you weren't due until this afternoon.
Uh-huh. Oh, this is Lieutenant Levinson and Mr. Diamond.
And,
how are you?
Police?
Yeah. They want to ask you a few questions. We got to clear up a few things about George Farmer getting burned to death.
Pop, that's enough, Pop.
I was only trying to help.
Well, certainly, gentlemen. Here, will you take these fish, please, Pop?
Fish? Hold the fish. Yeah, sure. I feel like that.
Well, I don't think I could tell you much more than I've already told the police.
Did you know George Farmer prior to his death?
Oh, yes, over a period of 10 years.
Did you identify the body?
Well, not at first. It was too badly burned.
Not at first? You mean you did identify it later?
Well, when they told me that George had a broken wrist, I found the broken section of bone and identified it.
Broken wrist?
Oh, yes, Mr. Diamond. You see, when George arrived, his lower arm was in a cast. He told us that he'd broken his wrist the week before.
What day did he arrive?
Tuesday of last week.
Well, put in a call to Otis and have him find out where George Farmer had his broken wrist treated. Most of all, when the accident occurred.
Well, what are you getting at, Rick?
Then have him find out the date the insurance policy went into effect. Doctor, which wrist was broken?
The right one.
And it was in a cast, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Would you say he could move his fingers well enough to write?
Depends on how recent the accident.
Step on it, Walt.
Okay, but I don't get it. I talked to Otis. He'll get the information. Call us back. Now, would you mind telling me what the devil this is all about?
George Farmer had to sign the insurance policy, didn't he?
Yeah, but he could have done that with his left hand.
An accident policy would cover a broken wrist, wouldn't it?
Sure, and what?
Mr. Phillips, you said Farmer was known to be careful with his money.
Yes, that's right.
I can vouch for that. I treated him for a cigarette burn 3 years ago and had a devil of a time collecting.
Thanks, Doctor.
Well, so what? So what?
So if Otis gives us the answers I want, I think I can show you George Farmer was murdered.
Murdered?
Yeah. And I think I can explain why an insurance salesman and a doctor were killed. So we all sat around and waited for my hunch to grow muscles. I kept turning the whole thing over in my mind, and the more I thought, the more the whole thing tied together. Around noon, a call came in from Otis, and Walt gave him the information I needed.
There it is. George Farmer broke his wrist on the 26th of last month. He was treated at the Olive Hospital.
About 3 weeks ago.
He stayed one night at the hospital and went home.
What date did he arrive here, Mr. Phillips?
About the 4th.
2 weeks after the accident. He died on the 11th, according to the papers.
Yes, that's right. He'd been here about a week.
When did the insurance policy go into effect, Walt?
The 22nd of last month.
It went into effect. It wasn't taken out.
I said, went into effect.
Now, it would cost him a few bucks to have a broken wrist taken care of and spend the night in the hospital, wouldn't it, Doctor?
Yes, it would.
Remember what the vice president of National Mutual said, Walt? Too bad the first claim on an accident policy had to be death?
Yeah.
Well, if Farmer had an accident policy, why didn't he put in a claim for his broken wrist? Come on, Walt. We're going back to town and talk to Mrs. Farmer. You got your men spotted around the building?
Whole block surrounded. Peterson and Evers are covering the front. Cars at every corner.
Isn't Otis going to play?
Well, there's been some complaints about noisy cats in the neighborhood, so I stuck Otis and back in the alley. He'll drive every cat right into the river.
You might have made a mistake. One yell out of Otis, and he'll end up with all the shoes in the block.
Here it is.
Yeah? Oh.
Mind if we come in, Mrs. Farmer?
No, I guess not. Well, what is it this time, Lieutenant?
We think your husband was murdered.
Well, that's ridiculous.
Now, we know you didn't do it, but you were in on it. You know who did.
Are you serious?
Very. We just had the lab make a check on the insurance policy. The signature and the fingerprints were from the right hand.
Well, of course they were.
So your husband didn't have a broken wrist at the time?
Well, no, he did that sometime later.
And you'll swear that it's his signature on the policy?
Certainly. I went to the doctor with him.
I thought you said you didn't know a Dr. Evans.
Well, I don't.
He was the insurance doctor.
Well, I'd never seen him before or since. How could you expect me
to
remember...
Your husband didn't turn in a claim for his broken wrist.
He didn't? Well, That was his business, wasn't it?
Don't you think it's rather strange to take out an accident policy and not turn in a claim on your first accident?
I don't know. I didn't bother with my husband's affairs.
Is this your husband's driver's license?
Where did you get that?
Motor vehicle department. Is it your husband's license?
Yes, I guess so.
The signature on this license is not the same as the one on the insurance policy.
What do you mean?
He means that the signature on the insurance policy is a very clever forgery. Who forged it, Mrs. Farmer?
I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about.
Who went to the doctor's office representing your husband?
No one. Why in the world would I do that? Why would I have someone represent my husband?
Probably because you wanted your husband out of the way.
That's horrible. Get out of here. That's not true.
Who was in on it with you? Who killed your husband up at his cabin at the lodge?
Get out. Get out.
It had to be someone at the lodge who knew what cabin he was in.
No.
Did you give the papers your husband's picture?
Yes.
You're lying. The newspapers told us you claimed not to have a picture.
Well, I don't remember. I don't remember.
Oh, sure you do. You didn't want to give the papers a picture of your husband because you knew the insurance salesman and the doctor would identify it as not being the man who took out the accident policy.
No.
You knew your husband was going to take his trip, so you planned his death and stayed home for an alibi.
The picture came out, and the insurance man and the doctor had to be killed. A man killed them, Mrs. Farmer. Someone strong enough to run a car off the road and lift an unconscious man out of a window, feet first.
Who killed him, Mrs. Farmer?
Hey, you, stop! Stop! Lieutenant!
Otis has got something.
Well, let's get out on the fire escape.
Stop, or I'll shoot!
There's a new line.
Somebody halfway up the fire escape. Look out, Otis!
Move over, Walt. Otis is going to hit a herd of elephants in the broom closet.
I got him, Lieutenant.
He got him.
Oh, make him happy, Walt. Climb out there and see what we got.
Okay.
Yeah, just take it easy, honey.
Quick!
Yeah?
It's that guy Phillips. The one who owned the lodge. And he's dead.
Well, Mrs. Farmer, that's it. Want to tell me about it?
Oh, yes. It doesn't make any difference now.
Phillips killed your husband and the other two men?
Yes. We fell in love 3 summers ago. But he planned it. The whole thing was his idea.
Oh, sure, sure, I know. But the state is pretty narrow-minded about those things, honey. Guy like that gets ideas and gets dead for it. You like his ideas, and you just got to get in some kind of trouble along the way.
Go on, Melonhead. Climb in. You're not hurt that bad.
I get told.
You get shot, Otis?
No. But I'd like to ask you something, Shamus. Did you throw a shoe at me?
Again, here's your Rexall family druggist.
Whenever you're suffering the pain of a headache, remember, there's no faster-acting aspirin made than Rexall aspirin. When swallowed with water, the 5-fold grains of pure aspirin in every Rexall tablet are ready to go to work for you even before they reach your stomach. Ask for Rexall aspirin at Rexall drugstores everywhere. There's no faster-acting aspirin made. And remember, you can depend on any drug product that bears the name Rexall.
Good health to all from Rexall. Richard Diamond, Private Detective, stars Dick Powell in the title role and is written by Blake Edwards, with music composed and conducted by Frank Wirth. Featured in tonight's cast were Virginia Gregg, Ted DeCorsia, Wilms Herbert, Wally Mayer, Joan Banks, and Bill Boucher. Richard Diamond, Private Detective, is transcribed in Hollywood by Jaime De Valle. This is Bill Foreman inviting you to be with us next Wednesday at this time when we will again bring you Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Hiya, beautiful.
Get lost, Bristlepuss. You need a shave.
But I have shaved. What else do you want me to do?
Silly boy, she wants you to go stag.
Go Stag? But why?
Because Stag is Rexall's exclusive line of men's good grooming aids, like Stag Brushless Shave Cream. No fuss, no massage, just smooth it on, and presto, you get a clean, close shave. Your face stays smooth and whiskerless all day long.
I'll do it, I'll do it, I'll...
Go Stag.
That's it. Join the Stag line now at Rexall drugstores everywhere.
Yes, to make girls care. Go Stag.
A real den of danger there in the North Woods, and it doesn't come from wild animals. It comes from pretty wild people. A camp proprietor and the wife of the deceased in the insurance matter, which includes not only a defenestration, but also a hit and run, and of course that fire in the North Woods that sets it all in motion. Our story came from August 23rd, 1950. We'll have a real life crime drama from Dragnet right after this. You're listening to Old Time Radio Drama on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.